Coming up on this week, we're talking the Manchester Derby, plus a look at how our teams are getting on. I'm on quiz duty this week. There's also some wonders away and who am I, so let's get started. Hello and welcome to a new episode of View from the Sideline podcast. It's Chris here and Liam is here as well. Hello, Liam.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Yeah, not so great. Not so great. It's happened again, Liam. They've lost again.
Yeah, and just when things are starting to turn a corner.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, there's nothing like losing at 12:30 on a Saturday either.
Ruins the whole weekend.
I'm with Jurgen Klopp on this one. I'm with him.
It's just,
especially how they played, but we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. We had another derby this weekend, the Manchester Derby.
We did.
I would say that one half of Manchester turned up. The red side, I'm not really too sure what happened. The game itself was just felt so one-sided. Even when Manchester United were, you know, going forward, it just didn't look like that they were actually going to score. I mean, Man City defended well in what they had to defend, but it's just not clicking for Man United at the moment. And
no,
City, you know, Man City were just ticking them off, weren't they?
Always in control, I think, weren't they?
I did
manage to catch it. Basically, from kickoff, United had a chance. In fact, they had a couple within the opening 5 minutes, I would say. But once that had happened and the initial, I guess, enthusiasm for the game, or adrenaline or whatever, once that had worn off, it was very much Man City in control. They didn't really get out of second gear, I don't think, to be honest. I thought Foden had a really good game for them, but other than that, they weren't really...
They weren't tested, were they, really?
No, not particularly. I mean, there was a couple of counter-attacks, but they were quite fairly easily dealt with, I think.
But yeah, even when they were counter-attacking, it just felt like, even if it was Hoyland or Rashford running forward, they didn't have any support. There was one bit where Hoyland had the ball, and it was almost through, but he just had no support, and he ended up having to go backwards, and that happened, I think, too many times for them, I think, yesterday. And, you know, especially against a team like Man City, you have to take the chances that you do have. You know, you do need to make the most of them. And, I mean, I thought Onana actually didn't have that bad of a game. He did make some really good saves.
Yeah,
there was one towards the end of the first half, with a header from Haaland, and, you know, we got across the goal pretty well. But, you know, for Man United, I mean, having to have Johnny Evans and Harry Maguire centre back, I mean, it's not great for them.
And I think
Lindelof was playing out of position,
and
left back as well. So,
but I think as soon as you see those two names on the team sheet, you know that. You know that Ten Hag's game plan then is, right, we're not going to press them. We're going to sit back and we're going to wait for a counter-attack. Because let's face it, Maguire and Evans, they're not the quickest of defenders, are they?
Yeah. So
they're not going to be playing a high line at the back. So they were going to let Man City control possession, and they were just going to try and sit deep. And then they were just going to try and hit them on the counter-attack, which a lot of teams will try and do that against Man City this season. I'm not saying that there's anything particularly wrong with that. We've seen it stop Man City before. Sometimes it's the only way to stop them. If you're going to play a high line, they're going to absolutely crucify you unless you've got quick defenders. So I don't necessarily have an issue with doing that, but I don't want to knock Harry Maguire, right? Because this isn't meant as a slight on him. He's not played enough to be considered out of form for me. So... Yeah. I just think it's an odd game to bring him back in when you know his confidence is low. I don't think he did too much wrong, but
no.
There's an obvious target for Man City especially Haaland as well. I mean, there was a couple of times when they did get given a penalty for wrestling in the box, but there was two or three more occasions when Maguire's just got his arms totally around Haaland at one point and frozen to the floor. And I just think, setting your team up like that, why would you put Maguire in at a game like that when you know that he's going through something, obviously, that's really tough at the moment? It just seemed a little bit unfair. And I think you're right, you know, going forward, they didn't really pose much of a threat. I think what Man United lack these days, they've not really got much in the way of pace. I don't think Hoyland is particularly the quickest. Rashford's got a bit of pace about him, but you look at their midfield, Anthony likes to sort of cut back and cut inside. He's not really one for taking anybody on round the outside or getting in behind or anything like that. Their midfielders, Eriksen, McTominay, Fernandes, none of them particularly quick. So when you're playing a counter-attacking style, the ball is naturally going to get to your striker and he's not going to have any support whatsoever because they've not got the pace to keep up with him. I don't know who to blame for that. I don't know whether it's Ten Hag or whether I don't think he's fully in control of their transfer policy. But if that's the way he wants to play, and let's face it, that's the way that Ajax sort of used to play when they were doing well in Europe under his management. They would sit deep and they'd try and get teams on the counter, and they had young players that would attack and run at opposition defenders and try and cause them trouble. Man United don't have the confidence or the pace to do that at the moment, so it was always going to be tricky for them. But City took their chances quite well. You're right, Onana made some good saves, but they just, it looked like they could just flick a switch at any moment and score. So
I mean,
yeah, they looked dangerous.
The second City goal was absolutely criminal to leave Haaland unmarked in the box. I mean, you're just asking for trouble. And when literally, you know, in the end of the first half, he'd already had a chance that almost identical to that. And for no one to pick him up, it's just very strange. And the other thing I noticed was, Eriksen seemed to be the holding midfielder yesterday.
Yes, they let McTominay go forward a bit, didn't they?
I think with Eriksen playing in a holding position, that is really only going to work if you want to pump long balls out wide, which he tried, and it just wasn't working. It felt at times that they just didn't have a centre forward on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because every time Haaland was picking the ball up, it was out wide.
Yeah.
I know Rashford is, you know, you could consider him in some way a centre forward, but even then he wasn't really getting involved in the box that much. So, you know, there's a lot for Ten Hag to do here. And, you know, I think again, this is all going to come down to time. It's whether do they give him the time? You know, personally for me, I just can't see it working with how he wants that team to be set up, like the team he had at Ajax. It's not going to work. Because first and most and foremost, they don't have that big centre forward like he did at Ajax.
Yeah.
And, you know, he always had that sort of number nine, sort of that big sort of tall, you know, striker that could, you know, bring the ball down and feed it off wide and get back into the box and just score from like 3 yards. But that's not going to happen with this team. And, you know, with what's going on at Ajax at the moment, do you think there's probably a little thing in his mind thinking, you know, I'm the money at Man United is probably a lot more than what he'd get at Ajax, but surely as a manager of a team that you've managed before, seeing him in that situation, are you not the slightest bit tempted to think, go back and sort of redeem it back to how it was?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have to invest a lot of money in that Ajax team to get it to where he was when he left.
Yeah.
But at this present time, I can't see them winning much under him, the way they're playing. And, even Man United, the investment's going to have to be vast to get that team back to probably where he wants it. I mean, you know, they signed Mason Mount in the summer.
I've not really seen much of him, lost. To be honest.
He looked lost. He came on at half-time yesterday. He looked lost. Yep. He didn't know. I don't think he even knew where he was supposed to be playing. And, you know, for me, they just need a midfielder. I know Fernandes is a good midfielder, but he's a good attacking midfielder, but it's still, you know, they want that box to box midfielder.
Yeah.
They need to invest in centre backs. So I don't know what's going on. You know, I know Varane and Martinez are both injured, but I mean, having to draft in Johnny Evans.
Yeah. Do you think that playing Varane and Martinez would have made any difference yesterday? Because I don't necessarily.
I think they lost it in midfield. I think that's where they were losing it. I mean, they were giving Grealish, Foden, and Bernardo Silva just too much space.
Yeah.
Every time they were on the ball, they were like backing off from them. And, you know, you give those three, you know, an inch, and, you know, all it takes is a cross, and Haaland's there. You know, he's going to be there or thereabouts. So.
Casemiro might have made a bit of a difference yesterday.
They're missing him. But for me, at the
I
moment,
don't think he wins in that game.
Rodri's probably the best defensive midfielder in the Premier League, if not, you know, in the world at the moment. He's just unbelievable at the moment. So, yeah, if I was a Man United fan, I think I'd be looking at maybe ways of actually changing how they play, because it just didn't work yesterday. I'm not even too sure what they were trying to do.
I mean, if I was a United fan now, and Villa have had their fair share of trouble. You know, we got relegated. At this point in the season now, all right, Man United still might feel they can win a cup or something like that, but let's face it, the league's gone, right? They're not going to challenge. They're going to struggle. They might get into Europe, but it's going to be a bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
I think they've, one of their prized assets, one of the things they're proud to be a Man United fan about is their academy, bringing through the young players. You know, they've had an academy graduate in that squad every game since 1950 something or whatever. I don't know the actual stat.
There's been an academy
graduate in the team for every game, right? Just accept where you are. You're not going to be challenging for the top of the table, and I don't think any Man United fan really considered that they would. But bring those players on. You know, the McTominay and Rashford were in the squad in the starting 11. Start Garnacho every week. If you don't like Antony, fine, don't play him then. You know, bring through those players. Accept that you might end up mid-table for a couple of years, but if you're going to bring them through, why not? Why not give yourself something to be proud about, like a homegrown talent or something that comes through the side, like Rashford when he did initially. Someone to get excited about. Someone to get in the England team, something like that. Because I think you look at Arsenal, and it's exactly what Arteta's done. I think he got Arsenal fans excited by bringing through Smith Rowe initially. I know he's been injured for a long time. Saka and Ketia. You know, their whole philosophy at the moment is built around their young players that have come through. They suffered a little bit when Arteta first joined, but now look at what's happened. You've got the academy there. Use it. You know, and I don't think they are. I think they've thrown money at the problem now for a decade or more since Ferguson's left. They've spent more than anybody, and it hasn't worked. So let's just, you know, let's just admit where we are and we'll focus on doing it another way.
I saw something online earlier about Manchester United going forward. Antony, Garnacho, Rashford, Martial and Hoyland have had two goal contributions between the five of them this season. And they both come from Rashford.
Yeah. Does that not
McTominay has scored three goals in the Premier League, which is more than the well, you can add Sancho in there as well if you want to, but he hasn't really played, has he? But
no.
So
you've got Diallo, who did well on loan. I think it was at Sunderland that he was at last year. Garnacho that United fans are excited about. They're excited about Minu. I don't know how you pronounce it, but he's meant to be a real talent coming through. Palestri as well has played a couple of games here and there, but normally comes off the bench. You've got Hannibal, who's come off the bench every now and again. Just give him a go now, because it's clear that certain players that they're regularly start, like for example, Sancho, they've got to the end of their patience with Sancho. It looks like he's going to be on his way out. Why don't you just sort of extend that to the other players? Like Maguire, he might want to be there, fine, but realistically, it's a long way back for him.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just cut his losses and just say, right, we're gonna start the youngsters now? It just I don't know, that when Villa were going through a rough time, the only thing that we sort of had to cheer was the fact that we were bringing through people like Grealish, Hepburn Murphy at the time. He obviously went off, didn't really make much of him, but we had an academy that were bringing through quite good players. So I just think it's worth giving the fans something to get excited about and someone to back.
Yeah. Cool. I think we've slated Man United just about enough there. Maybe we revisit this again in 3-4 weeks time.
When they've gone on a run of like 6 games unbeaten. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move over to our teams now. We'll start at Chelsea. I said this last week about, you know, how well I thought they played against Arsenal, and I thought we both agreed that they had, you know, one of their best games this season. And I said it would be nothing if they went and lost on Saturday, which obviously typically they did. So yeah, I mean, where do I start? I don't even know where to start of it, to be honest with you. I think Saturday is the perfect example of how Chelsea have been in the last 2 years. Everything up until the final third seems to be working okay. Yes, we are conceding goals, but not leaking enough for me to think that, you know, defensively we're in trouble.
Yep.
Midfield, I think Enzo Fernandez, I've said before, I think he's better than Caicedo, but they're getting through the work in there. And feeding some half-decent balls, I would say, forward.
Yep.
But it's at that point where we seem to be really, really struggling. And it's almost at times we get the ball into good positions, but no one seems to know what to do with it. It's like all the forwards have just forgotten at stages in a game on what they should be doing. It's just very, very frustrating to watch sometimes, you know, seeing us get forward, get in good positions, but just not making anything of it. I mean, what's something, XG, whatever it's called. What is it, XG?
Yeah.
We've got one of the highest XGs in the Premier League over the last 2 years, but it's minus.
Yeah.
We are at a -6, and we are minus by a long, long way as well compared to other teams. And, you know, I think Poch has got the right idea. I think how we're actually set up is probably the best that we are going to be set up formation wise.
Yeah.
He didn't revert back to 5 at the back, which I thought was a good idea. But again, it's just that final third. Trying to unlock teams is where we are really struggling. And, you know, Nicholas Jackson has been in and out of the team. You know, he shows signs of being really good. And then some games he kind of just filters out. I think Cole Palmer, I think, is a good signing. I think he's got sort of that grit and determination, I think, that we just spoke about some Man United players don't have.
Yeah.
I think he looks good. When he's going forward, he looks good. He looks motivated. It's the same with Sterling as well. I think those two, I think they deserve to stay in the team. But it's going to be interesting because I think after the international break is when Nkunku is due back.
He's not so far away.
We will finally get to see him play, and hopefully he could be the answer to us scoring a few more goals.
He could be.
Because in pre-season, he was the one player for me that stood out the most in the goals that he scored. And he's really quick as well. So, yeah, I think when he's back, but obviously when I say he's back, he's not going to be back, you know, playing 90 minutes each game. I don't expect him to be back in the actual squad until probably about mid-December, I think. And he'll probably get injured again after playing all those games over Christmas. I don't necessarily think Poch is doing anything wrong. I think a lot of people are confused by the transfer policy. I don't really see why people are confused. To me, it looks obvious. They've bought all these young players for one reason, and that's for them to play together for the next 2 or 3 years, and then hopefully it pays off.
Yeah.
Because we must have one of the youngest squads in the league. I know we got Thiago Silva's literally probably pushing the average age up quite a lot, but we must really have one of the youngest squads. I mean, the substitute bench again on Saturday was thin, to say the least. I mean, Reece James is on there, but you had Matos, Beach, you know.
Yeah, Matson, David Washington came on.
Yeah.
Petrovic, I don't even know who that is. Badiashile, I think, is he 20,
yeah, so
21?
He was actually playing quite regularly last season.
Yeah.
And he looks all right. I think him and Dzazi, I think, will have a good partnership moving forward. But he's only just come. So that was the first time he's been in the squad for some time because he's been out for a while. Chilwell wasn't expected back until December. Lavia's expected to be back after the international break.
The subs you brought on, obviously Reece James came on, so he's obviously coming back from injury, but the other three subs you made were David Washington, Uga Chukwu and Ian Matson.
Yeah.
That actually came on. It's not really, you know, if a game's not going your way,
just
then
all young,
they're not,
they?
Yeah,
the
they're
thing.
Not really changes. Nothing's going to really change the game, I suppose. But yeah, obviously you do have a lot of injuries. But yeah, I think that you're right. The transfer policy is very much geared around what's going to happen in 2 years' time rather than
I was talking to someone earlier. I think from a Chelsea fan point of view, there obviously is going to be expectation that, yes, you know, let's have a go at one of the cups maybe. But I think we know deep down that the league for the next 2-3 years is probably out of reach.
Mm-hmm.
I think Poch's job will be safe. I think he may have, I know this is just me thinking, but he's probably been told, you know, get ourselves in a half decent, because we're not that far off European place, to be honest with you. It's not completely out of.
No, you know, I mean, it's early days of the season.
Yeah,
you're 4 points behind Brighton.
Exactly. So, you know, if we can, you know, if he gets us into Europe, any sort of competition in Europe, I think that will be a successful season.
Yeah.
I think the cherry on the top would be one of the cups. And obviously that's a way into Europe anyway. But yeah, I think it will be time with it. I think this is what we're going to see for the next 2 seasons at least. I think until they're confident that these young players, you know, are going to, you know, they're going to have played together for 2-3 seasons, and then I guess they just hope it's going to pay off. I mean, if it doesn't pay off, someone's
getting their head through. Expensive error to make, isn't it? But
and they're going to have to try and recoup some of this. You know, because obviously a lot's been said about how much we've spent over the last like year and a half. But I'm assuming that going forward that they've done it all now because they to buy the players young. And then so in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 seasons, they're not going to have to, you know, replace these players.
Yeah, stick them on long contracts.
That's
so,
exactly what they've done. Yeah. They've they've done. They, you know, most of the players that we signed are on, you know, 7 or 8 year deals.
Yeah.
So, you know, and well it's literally going to be a wait and see.
Yeah.
This is an experiment, basically. When you think about it, it's an experiment of, I don't think many clubs have done this before where they've spent 600 million on under 21 players.
No. Not to this extent, anyway. Yeah. And I know that there are teams that obviously do focus on youth.
Yeah.
And we've spoken about like Brentford being one of them and Brighton and things like that. But to have invested, invested the amount that you have in talent from, I guess, other academies, other teams and things like that to bring them actually into the club. But what is good?
And just bought every player, every young player that is said to be good in the next, 10 years.
Yeah,
that's what they've done.
They've been on Football Manager.
Yeah,
they've filtered by Wonder Kid, and they've just gone to every club.
They've just paid the money. They've just paid.
Yeah,
you know, because I guess if you're, you know, Mr. A Club and Chelsea say we'll give you 45 million for your 18-year-old, you know, who could potentially be a world-class player in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, Club A is going to go, okay, you can give us 45 million, you know, so,
Exactly, and I imagine they've got incredible bonuses based on what you win as well, just because that's how it operates in this day and age, you know, so but what it is good to see, I think, you know, there are teams that have done it in the past, and I think, you know, Man City used to be guilty of it. I remember them, I suppose in a way they sort of still are, but remember when they bought Rodwell, Scott Sinclair, you know, like British talent that was coming through was sort of 21 years old, paid a lot of money for it and then sat them on the bench. So at least,
and they just,
you know,
ended up scrapping the idea and just buying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can say they've done the same with Calvin Phillips, but he's a little bit older. It's nice to see them actually get in a game rather than, you know, just being bought as a squad filler. You know, they've got registration to meet and things like that with homegrown quotas and stuff. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what you do. What did you make of Brentford this season? I think they've been a bit of a funny side, but they obviously played quite well.
But they've been up and down. I mean, on Saturday, they looked okay. I think at times Chelsea made them look a lot better than what they actually are. Been a bit hit and miss for me. I don't know whether that's because Ivan Toney's not, you know, not playing. They're still in a fairly decent position. So I don't think they've got anything to worry about. I think what they're doing at the moment, I think is fine, and I think when Toney comes back, they'll have, you know, their main striker back, and, you know, I think it'll only get better for them. Unless they sell him.
I mean, my favourite moment for the weekend was Neil Mopé's yellow card. I just thought that is the that is just modern football in a nutshell, really. Not even on the pitch. And still somehow gets booked. I just thought that was brilliant. If you've not seen that, I think it was on Match of the Day. He's not even on the pitch. He's just warming up and then just kicks the ball away. It's delightful.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like I said, let's wait and see. Chukwuemeka is supposed to be back as well in the next couple of weeks. So
I bet he wishes he hadn't gone now. You know, could have been in Europe this
season. Yeah, I mean,
£100,000 a week, though. £100,000 a week probably says.
I mean, before Before he got injured, he was actually playing really well. He had a good game against, even though we lost, he scored against West Ham. He played pretty well. He'll be fighting for one of the places in that team when he's back. But when all these players come back from injury, God knows what he's going to do. I have no idea.
He's going to have a massive squad.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Villa.
Yes. Send on a positive note for the first half.
Yeah, I know it was only Leon, but I mean, you're going from strength to strength at the moment.
Yeah.
I think what I'm seeing is the spine of your team is, you're forming a very good spine.
Mm-hmm.
And at the heart of that spine seems to be Douglas Luiz.
Yeah.
And I'm really confused. I'm really confused how good he's been.
Yeah.
In the last 6 months.
It's almost like Gerrard wasn't getting the best out of him.
You didn't see, Douglas Luiz assisted a goal, or Douglas Luiz has scored a goal. It's just I assume he's being used differently in the squad.
Yeah, massively differently. So he was very much a holding midfielder, you know, win the ball back, pass it 10 yards, let everybody else get forward and get goals. He's been given a bit more free rein, which I think Villa fans have wanted for a while. Like you say, he didn't really score or assist that much prior to this season. He'd scored the odd corner like he did last year. But other than that, he didn't really do too much in an attacking sense. But I think Emery this season, because we've got Kamara fit and playing, has given Douglas Luiz a bit more of a license to get forward. And he's got an eye for a pass, to be fair to him. He's got an eye for, obviously he's scored a couple of goals. He's on penalty duty for us now, I think. He's always took free kicks and corners and things like that, but we've had varying degrees of success with our set piece coach. Now it kind of looks it's much more successful this season. It kind of looks like Gerrard was maybe not using his set piece coach very much, because we scored a lot from set. Well, we scored a lot of goals, full stop, and he's been a big part of them. But yeah, him and McGinn. Villa fans have quite often seen McGinn play for Scotland, and he gets quite a few goals. His ratio is pretty good for Scotland. And we've always thought that there was more attacking threat there than we sort of asked him to do. We were sort of playing him and Luiz both in a defensive capacity and then letting sort of Watkins do all the running around. But yeah, we've changed it a bit now. Kamara's come in and he's been great. I know he got injured a bit last year, but he was still good last season, and it's just given him a bit more freedom. So yeah, long may it continue. They're doing well for us. We are top scorers in the league, I think.
And
I had a look earlier today. Joint with Newcastle, but still, I'm taking it.
And just out of curiosity, what is the price tag on Ollie Watkins?
How much have you got, to be honest? I think at the minute I would not be selling him for cheap, put it that way. I think he just suits Emery's game plan. We've got, like I sort of said, we're the opposite to Man United. We play with a lot of pace now. Diaby is so quick. From a standing start, there was a couple of times where he just looked like he wasn't particularly interested in the game against Luton, and then he just flicks a switch and all of a sudden he's in behind. And it's just kind of getting that link up between him and the rest of the team, which I think we're doing quite well to know when he's going to make those runs. With Leon Bailey as well, who we know is quite quick. Watkins is obviously, he's pretty quick himself, but he puts a lot of effort in. We just look dangerous going forward, and we haven't done for a number of years. We just look like every time we attack a team, there's going to be a chance at the end of it. We're getting people in the box, which is good to see. I think the only person that so far has joined this season that I don't think he's settled in quite well, and I think it's more for external reasons than anything. But Zaniolo, he's done okay, but he's not really contributed much in the way of goals or assists just yet. But I think it's a matter of time. The way Emery's got us lined up, I'm sure it'll be a matter of time before he starts getting amongst the goals as well. So plenty of options. And we've got depth, which we've never had before. you know, it was sort of one injury and then the rest of the season was ruined. But, you know, we're playing this well without, obviously, Mings at the back is a big loss. Moreno came in last season and did really well before getting injured. And Buendia, who was probably our most creative player before the start of this season, and they're out long term. So, yeah, to be doing this well at the moment. But like you say, the spine of the team's been quite impressive. I know he made a mistake this weekend, but Cons has been really solid for us at the back. I'm quite glad Southgate's not taking a look at him yet, because I don't want him to go away and get injured or anything like that. But he's certainly deserving of being looked at for the England setup, because he's been really good for us. And then obviously at the back, as has just been announced tonight, World Goalkeeper of the Year, Emi Martinez. yeah, what can you say? It's an exciting time to be a Villa fan.
Yeah, it is. I mean, going forward, you look, you know, really, really dangerous. It's like you said, you haven't done for a long time. And it seems like the players are working really hard for the manager.
Yeah.
Whereas with Gerrard, it didn't look great at times.
No.
But I think Emery comes with, you know, a quite high standard. You know, his Sevilla teams were always well drilled, always dangerous going forward. But, you know, when defending, very hard to break down. So I think he's brought a lot of that, you know, with him. Sort of that's how he wants to play.
We do play a quite dangerous high back line at times. You know, sometimes watching it, and I've obviously watched a lot of our games this year, you do have your heart in the mouth for the moment. But generally, other than the Liverpool game, we have actually caught a lot of people offside. I don't know whether you've noticed that in any of the games that you've seen us play this season. There's been a lot of offside in our favour, because we basically stand on the halfway line and just let people run on. And it against West Ham, you can see it was really frustrating for Antonio. He's trying to get in behind every time, and the flag just kept going up. But it's a bit nervy to watch, to be honest.
Yeah. Maybe Emery will get his Real Union team.
Yes.
Which we found out. When did we find this out? Last week?
He owns
the club. Yeah, he owns the club in Spain.
Yeah.
So maybe some of your players will be going there to get some game time.
Start an affiliation. Get a loan affiliation going.
But it's all looking rosy for Villa at the moment. And it's nice to be in and amongst, you know, some of the top teams in the league as well.
And that
must be giving the players confidence that, you know, that's where you are at this stage of the season.
I'm under no illusion that we're going to have a title challenge. I know we're obviously in the top five at the moment. I think there's only 4 points between the top five. But if we finish fifth, that'll be a huge achievement for us. Massive, massive achievement. I think that's our highest Premier League finish since the 90s. So that would be, something to really celebrate. So, it's a good target.
Since Milosevic.
Yes. Maybe even before that, actually. I'm not going to embarrass myself by going that far back, because it's a bit depressing to know that we've not been that good for so long.
So just before the end of part one, I was just going to bring up the Over Weymouth game last week broke a National League South record for crowd with 6,289 attendance.
Unbelievable.
Which is huge for a National League South. And I think they got like 3,500 on Saturday as well. So over the two games, they had over 10,000 fans in the stadium, which is huge, which is really big. So kind of romping that league now, if I'm not going to lie, after a bit of a shaky start.
Yeah.
They won 10 games in a row now, so they are really starting to coast that league now. So
yeah.
Yeah. So that's the end of part one. In part two, I've got an expert quiz for you, apparently. Expert quiz, that's what it says. There's some Wonders of White and a Who Am I? So we're back in two. Hello and welcome back to part two of this week's episode. I got some Wonders of White for you, Liam, but they are all around Manchester City.
There was me thinking they were going to be around how good Villa were, but okay, I'll accept it.
Okay, so we're going to start. A lot of them may include Erling Haaland. So Erling Haaland's penalty was the first Manchester City have ever been awarded at Old Trafford in the Premier League.
Yeah, but you could say that, I think, about most teams in the Premier League, right? Because no one ever gets a penalty at Old Trafford.
27 games.
Oh,
he played there, first in 27.
Wow.
So the next one, most goals and assists in the Premier League Manchester derby. So Ryan Giggs has the most with 13 in 29 games. Cantona had 10 in 6. Wayne Rooney had 9 in 21. Aguero had 8 in 13. And Erling Haaland has 8 in 3. two more, and he will be at the same level as Cantona, but with two fewer appearances. He's already level with Aguero.
And Aguero was incredible as well. He's one of my favourite strikers to watch. But yeah, that is, yeah, he's broken all the records, isn't he?
Manchester United. I say they were about Man City. This one is actually about Man United, but Manchester United have lost half of their games in the Premier League this season. That's 5 of 10, which is the most defeats from the opening 10 games in a league campaign since 86-87. They actually had 6 defeats of 10.
Yeah. But, you know, that was Fergie, and look what he went on to do. So, stick with Ten Hag for another, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah.
Before Fergie won anything?
Yeah.
So you never know.
And the last one, since the start of last season, Erling Haaland has 8 direct goal involvements against Manchester United, which is the most by any player against a single opponent in Europe's Big 5 leagues. So he likes playing against Man United.
He does. And I don't blame... I mean, they were chanting Roy Keane's name yesterday, and it just seemed to spur him on, to be honest. So
I see Roy Keane had a bit of a dig at Bruno Fernandes, didn't he, after the game? Saying he's
did he?
Said he's not... He wouldn't be captain if he had his choice. He wouldn't be captain.
Got to say, and I don't normally agree with Roy Keane, but I think I do, actually, on this
one. Oh, I do have this one about Pep Guardiola as well. He's won 60 more games in the Premier League since 2016 than Manchester United have. So,
United fans would love that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to go down very well. Okay, I've got a quiz for you. No frazzle dazzle this week. I've just gone back to the old bog standard 10 questions. The only caveat is it did say that these questions are an expert level. But I know a couple without...
Okay.
Some I didn't even know. So okay. This is going to be fun. Okay, question one. Which footballer has won the Premier League with Leicester and Manchester City?
That would have to be Mahrez.
Is Mahrez, and I'll tell you now, that's the easiest question.
Okay, that's...
So question two is, which player had 13 years between two Champions League wins? So they won it in 95 and 2008.
Oh my God. 95 and 2008.
If you know who won it, I guess it might be a bit obvious.
I think I do. Because I reckon 95 was that young Ajax team. So I reckon it's probably one of the younger players in that team, like Seydorf. I'm going to go with Seydorf.
It wasn't Seydorf.
Van der Sar?
It was Van der Sar.
I was torn between the two. I couldn't remember who won it in 2008. I thought it was AC Milan.
It was Man United. Unfortunately, they beat Chelsea in Russia. What is Juventus' club nickname?
The old lady, I think.
Which EFL club play at the Wham Stadium?
Oh God! And every time this comes on, like the TV, I'm like, who named that? And I can never remember who it is. I want to say it is one of the worst football stadium names. I want to say it's like Accrington Stanley. I'm going to go with them.
Correct.
Oh.
Stanley, they do play at the Wham Stadium.
The only worst one, I think it's in Scotland, is the Tony Macaroni Stadium, which just always makes me laugh. I'm sure he was a club legend, but just the name. Just makes me laugh every time.
Reece James spent the 1920 season on loan at which EFL club?
I'm guessing that's one that you knew.
Yeah, this is the one.
Yeah. I think it was Wigan.
It was Wigan, yeah. Who is the Bundesliga all-time top goal scorer?
Oh. Well,
I can give you a clue. He's not Polish.
I was going to say Lewandowski's got to be up there, but I'm sure that there are, because it's been going a long time, I think, the Bundesliga. So there's got to be one of the German national strikers has got to have scored loads. Who was the one whose record Messi beat? I want to say it was Gerd Müller. I'm going to go with him, because he scored like 70 goals in the season, didn't he?
Correct. He scored 365 goals.
That wasn't a bad guess.
No. How many teams originally competed in the Premier League?
Oh, it's either 22 or 24. I think it was 22.
Final answer?
Yeah, final answer.
Was 22?
I thought it had changed. Well,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 out of 7 so far.
Now it goes wrong. Well, clearly I am an expert. That's why I'm on this podcast.
Three players shared the golden boot in the Premier League in 2019.
Oh.
Which three players was it?
Oh, God. Salah?
It's one.
Aguero?
Nah. It was not Aguero. It was Salah. Mane.
Oh.
And Aubameyang.
Oh, I never would have said Aubameyang.
Neither would have I.
No.
Which Premier League striker was the first to score 20-plus goals in the Premier League 5 consecutive times?
Oh, Jesus. No, that wasn't my answer, by the way. I know Gabriel Jesus hasn't scored that many.
I've got to take it as your final answer.
It's got to be either Shearer or Henry. I'll go Shearer.
Is the other one.
Oh, no. Oh, he was so good, wasn't he?
Yeah, there was Thierry Henry. Oh,
he was so good.
And final question. Which company has sponsored the EFL trophy since 2020? I had to call it the EFL trophy because the actual name of the trophy is actually
the sponsor's name.
Trophy.
Oh, do you know what? I've no idea. I'm just going to have to go with the Johnson's Paint. It's the last one that I can remember, but I know it's not that.
It used to be called the Johnson's Paint.
Yeah.
It's had some funny names over the past, but it's now, since 2020, the Papa John's trophy.
Never in a million years would have got that.
Winner gets trophy and free pizza for a year.
I remember it being the LDV Vans trophy. That's how far back my memory goes. But
you were sponsored by them, weren't you? I guess
we were. Yeah, we were.
You got 6 out of 10 on the expert quiz, which I would still say is pretty good. To be fair,
that's not bad. I'm quite happy. No. I was close with Henri and Alan Shearer. So
yeah, those last three questions were pretty difficult. To be fair with you.
Do you want to? Who am I?
Yes, I will take one, please.
Okay, I think this one's going to be relatively easy for you, but we will see. So it's a retired player, so I'm going to give you...
Okay, retired. So I'll get all of it? Or
Yes, I'll give you all of it. So they started their career at Leeds United. They then went
it's
to...
Not a good giveaway. Normally I get like a...
I know, some strange Argentinian second division. Side. No, Leeds United this time around. Then moved to Levante. Then went to Sunderland, Blackpool, Carlisle United, Reading, and ended their career at Bournemouth. If you need me to repeat that, because it was 7 teams, I'm happy to repeat any.
Got a lot of northern teams with a bit of Spanish teams in there.
Yeah, it's an unusual mix.
Do you know what the giveaway might have been? The Levante thing?
Yeah, there's
the
not many.
Is it Ian Hart?
It is Ian Hart, yes, it is. I thought that might give it away just slightly, but sometimes people forget that move.
Strange move that was.
It was a bit of a weird one, but I guess Leeds sort of went into a bit of debt, didn't they, and had to sell everybody. But there was a couple of reasons why I included him. So for Carlisle United, Ian Hart ended up their top scorer one season with 18 goals for a left back.
Incredible.
That's not bad, is it? Not bad at all. And even one season in the Premier League, he even scored 11 for Leeds. Pretty good going. But I included him because he's now an agent. I don't know whether you knew this. He's an agent. It says... This is on his Wikipedia page, so it may be total rubbish. But after retiring from football, he's become an agent, and one of his clients includes former Leeds United footballer Tyler Denton, who now plays for Scunthorpe, who's at the same level as Yeovil.
Well,
yeah. But yeah, I just thought that they were two strange things for a left-back to do, top scorer in one season. And he's now gone on to be an agent.
I'm looking at his... Wiki now, because I always find out things about players.
Yeah, 85 goals in his career, that's not bad going, is it, really?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, says he played in the Premier League with Reading again, and with Sunderland, so it's not like he kind of... I mean, the first season he was at Levante, they did get relegated.
They did go down.
But even then, he scored 9 goals in the second... division.
Yeah, he did score quite a few. I mean, he was a good free kick taker, wasn't he? I think he took a lot of set pieces, but yeah, he got double figures for most of the clubs that he played for. But yeah, 18 goals in a season.
He scored a fair few goals for Republic of Ireland as well. 12 and 64 ain't bad for a defender.
No, not bad going at all. But yeah, good player. very underrated, but yeah, he did just the end to his career. I totally forgot about him playing for Reading again in the Premier League, but Blackpool, Carlisle, Sunderland, I've got no memory of that whatsoever.
I don't want to show any disrespect to him, but his goals for Republic of Ireland came against Bolivia, Liechtenstein, Czech Republic, Cyprus, Andorra, Cyprus, Iran, Denmark, Switzerland, Czech Republic, Israel, and the Faroe Islands.
He likes to go against Czech Republic and Cyprus, didn't he?
So, yeah, his first ever goal for Republic of Ireland came in a 1996 US Cup match, where Mexico, Bolivia, USA and Ireland played a tournament.
There you go. You learn something new every day, don't you?
Mexico actually won the tournament. And
Ireland came third.
Claudio Reyna is playing for USA.
Brad Friedel. Scored.
Yeah, he scored, Claudio Reyna. How did they get on? Mexico won. I mean, they weren't very high scoring games. 1-0, 2-1. It was a 2-2 there.
Brian McBride played in the final for the United States.
There you go. Right. Anything else this week?
Well, just long may the Villa form continue.
Fingers crossed for next Monday night, everyone.
Yeah.
Let's all have positive thoughts for a Chelsea win. Positive thoughts.